Time now for the big questions, which we do every single Tuesday at this time.
Numero uno.
I wanted to do this because it's June 4th. We're in the middle of OTAs for the Texans, day number three, taking a look at the division as a whole. Guys, which team in the AFC South had the best offseason? I'm going to answer this one first and tell you the Jaguars had the best offseason. Adding Nick Foles, what they did in the draft between Josh Allen, the linebacker from Kentucky, the defensive end pass rusher who I thought was a great value for them at number seven, and then ending up with Jawan Taylor, the tackle in the top of the second round. I don't know if Jacksonville's upside is close to what it was 2 years ago with their amazing defense and what they're able to do, but they had the best offseason of any team in this division.
I'll say, because despite Nick Foles' extreme success versus the Texans last year, I think that the Titans, with their addition of Roger Saffold and Adam Humphries, Cameron Wake, Ryan Tannehill. I have to tack that. I'll tack Ryan Tannehill.
AJ Brown.
Just to make Paul happy. But especially with the Adam Humphries addition, whatever Marcus Mariota is as a quarterback, they'll find out this year. Because they now have Corey Davis. They have Adam Humphries. They've got a bolstered offensive line. Like, they've made improvements on defense, and it was already a pretty good defense to begin with. I think that they made the best overall additions, and I feel better about them as a team than the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I feel the same as you. I think it's the Titans. The Jaguars lost a lot of pieces again still, so I can't do Jacksonville. Well, I like what some of the things that Indianapolis did. I still think that they stood a little bit too pat in free agency, though I do like bringing in Justin Houston. But for the Titans, look at what they did in the draft. A.J. Brown, you get a wide receiver, another playmaker that theoretically could help out Marcus Mariota, and they got a guy in Jeffrey Simmons who was supposed to be a top 10 draft pick until he tore his ACL. So they got a lot, and it's now a matter of, is Marcus Mariota even remotely capable of being an above-average to good quarterback?
I still like Jacksonville's offseason more.
The other thing about
it's all about Foles, isn't it, with Jacksonville?
Right.
It's a lot about Foles. But that Josh Allen pick, the fact that the Giants took Daniel Jones, that was the spot where a lot of people thought Josh Allen would go. I just think about this, especially from a Texans standpoint. When you're facing the Jacksonville Jaguars, you've got Ngakoue on one side, Josh Allen on the other side, and you've got Calais Campbell, Marcel Darius up the middle as well. That is going to be tough.
Yeah, it's a good pass rush, but I mean, look at the wide receivers that Nick Foles is throwing to. They just had to sign Terrell Pryor. Like, I think Jacksonville's got a way to go on offense. They're going to be in the Stone Age.
I agree with you about the skill positions. They have issues at receiver.
And I think people keep expecting that defense somehow is going to go back to what it was in 2017. Yeah. The cornerbacks didn't play as well last year as they did the year before. They've lost Telvin Smith now, who just up and retired out of nowhere. The speed Gibson that they have in the back seven just isn't. Yeah, they lost to Sean Gibson. I don't understand how people can so easily think like, oh yeah, boy, that was an historically good defense. They'll just wind that back after off year and be good again. So I there's no way I can think that the Jaguars are going to be as good as the Titans this year.
So on Numero the bright dos. Side, none of us picked the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, that's because they were already good enough to begin. Neither of those teams are still as good as the Colts.
Well, I was just saying the best offseason. Yeah. Not team. If I'm picking the best team in the division, obviously a much different answer. All right, number two, what's going to happen long-term with Mike D'Antoni and the Rockets?
He's going to play out. It's going to be an ugly year, and they're going to play it out, but he and Tillman Fertitta and Daryl Morey will obviously have some level of disconnect. I don't know what it is or who's to blame or what the hell's going on over there, but it will play out in that there's no way you could justify firing D'Antoni during the season.
Well, you could if things went poorly.
Chris Paul's going to play 50% of the games during the regular season, and D'Antoni will be just unceremoniously unsigned after next season, after a first-round playoff departure. That's how I'm feeling about it right now. I'm sorry. I'd like to feel better about it, but I feel really icky about the Rockets right now.
This is it. It's over. I mean, this is the last season. He's gone. I don't know why he'd want to come back.
I agree with you guys. Maybe not playing out in the exact same way. This is going to be it for D'Antoni and the Rockets, and There are some situations where the lame duck coach is not a big deal. I think in this case, it is a big deal.
Well, because
where they are organizationally, what assistant coaches they can recruit or not recruit, and the way this season's going to go, and all the rumors about change, I don't think it's going to go well. I think there's a chance that things go poorly enough they fire Mike during the season, and I believe that he'll be gone in a year. I think that this is it for the Rockets and Mike D'Antoni.
The lame duck problem can sometimes become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it feels like, without blaming any one particular party about it, it's already become a bigger distraction than it needs to be. I think there are times where you can get away with it and it does work out, perhaps. But this year, it's already become such a big talking point. And as James Harden and Chris Paul already have whatever issues they have, you know, whatever argument they have or disconnect they have between them, I don't see how this situation gets improved with a lame duck coaching situation. I feel very uncomfortable with all this right now, Mike, and I want to feel much better about the Rockets.
You can't, though.
I know, but you know what the most frustrating thing about it is that as much as I feel this way about it, they're still going to make the playoffs. They still might win the first round of the playoffs, but it just feels like there's such untapped potential there.
There is one wild card, which is whatever Morey does in the next couple of months. Let's say he swings a big deal or two, and they do something in the offseason. Could we feel much differently about this team in August or July versus how we feel right now?
Yeah.
I still think that is a possibility. That's the one wild card. But as far as Mike and the Rockets, it doesn't seem clearly like Tillman is all about Mike D'Antoni, so I think this will be it.
It is important to point out, nobody saw the James Harden trade coming. Nobody saw Chris Paul coming. And it just changed your whole outlook on everything, like, from the get-go.
Yes.
Or, like, as soon as it happened. The one thing about Daryl Morey is kind of like the way new technologies evolve. Like, in 1970, nobody predicted that the personal computer was going to be such a huge part of people's lives 10 years later. And then, likewise, in the year 2000, nobody thought smartphones were going to be what they were by 2010. Daryl Morey's kind of like that. Like, I can't predict what the Rockets are going to be next year because Daryl Morey will evolve some new technology.
The big questions
there's my TED Talk.
Tuesday.
Número tres.
How long can Corbin Martin stay in the Astros rotation? He pitched 3 innings last night. Another high pitch count, a lot of efforts. They had to expend more of the bullpen. How long can Corbin Martin stay in the rotation?
6 innings. He's got 6 innings to prove himself.
Is that one start or
if
two?
If he goes, it's one start. Because okay. He won't get a chance to get 6 innings over 2 starts again, I don't think.
Is that one start, 2 starts,
is that,
three?
Right, exactly. Like, I don't think they'll give him a chance. If he only goes 3 innings the next time he's out, they got to give him some time back down in the minors to figure things out. Because they know what the mechanical issue is. He's not fixing it. They know he's going to be good in the long term. They just have to fix this thing. And it seems like it might just all be a little overwhelming for him right now.
Yeah,
so I'll say somewhere between the next 3 to 6 innings.
I think the next start is when you really have the ability to make a decision. Because I think you look at that, you wonder, okay, if he can, as Seth just pointed out, see some of the things that he's actually having real issues with. If he can't actually correct them, then you have to have somebody sit him down and say, hey, look, this is what you're doing wrong, and also have him learn it at a non-high stakes level. So yeah, you send him down.
You know what would be nice is if it'd be nice if Forrest Whitley weren't the disaster that he's been this season.
He's been so bad.
And now with his injury, and he's just not an option at all. You'd be getting right up into this service time cutoff where it'd be like, oh, okay, but you know, Corbin's struggling. Let's see what we can do with Forrest Whitley. But obviously, like, he's not even in the conversation.
This is why you got to be careful when you feel really good about your prospects, because I think the Astros might have been a little guilty of that when it comes to how they handled the Dallas Keuchel situation. I'm curious as to what happens with him, too. As Scott Boras says, as the wine decants Dallas Keuchel.
I think it's one more start for Corbin Martin, and it's not as much to me about the team and how much he might be hurting the bullpen as it is himself. I'm confident that Martin is going to be someone who contributes to this baseball team moving forward. He's young. He's, what, 23, 24 years old. He obviously has good stuff. But at this point, it's more about him hurting himself. And if he's thinking out there so much, then it's more about his sake. If this continues, I give him one more start, and then I send him back down to AAA to work on his game. Not as much for the team as it is for himself.
Number 4.
Last week, we predicted the NBA Finals, and Paul predicted the Warriors winning in 5. Seth and I went with the Warriors in 6 games. We've had a chance to see the first two games. We've seen the injuries as well pile up on the Golden State side. Have your opinions changed on who's going to win the series and how many games?
What did I say? I said
Warriors in 6.
Yeah, okay. Warriors in 6. No, I'm still there. And if anything, that feels a little bit pessimistic. I don't trust these Raptors. I don't trust Nick Nurse. I damn sure don't trust Drake. And whatever Drake has done to just like kind of irk the Warriors just enough where it doesn't feel like just fun, playful jabbing anymore. I think these guys despise Drake and they're sick of him trying to play professional athlete on the sideline there. And they want to shove it down his throat.
I am feeling a lot less confident about Warriors in five, which I picked. And I think that I would be Max Kellerman if I were to double down and continue to say Warriors in five. So I'm going to say Warriors in seven right now because I don't know what's going on with Klay Thompson, and I don't know what's going on with Kevin Durant. And I know Kevin Looney's out for the rest of the series. That's a lot. That's a lot to go through.
It's a lot. I'm going to agree with Paul, and I'm going to change my pick from Warriors in six to Warriors in seven because I just think that with the health, they're going to need the extra game to find a way to win these four, to win three more, I should say. And
Quinn Cook, baby.
Quinn Cook.
I'm telling you, in your daily fantasy. Is there basketball daily fantasy? I don't
there
follow
is.
These things. Quinn Cook, he's your guy.
He's your
gonna
guy.
Hit, he's going to hit, probably conservative estimate, 10 threes tonight. And
Tomorrow night.
Yeah, no, but in practice tonight, he'll hit 10. And then tomorrow night, he'll hit 10 threes.
All right, so I'm going to go with Warriors in 7, and Paul goes with Warriors in 7 as well. Seth is sticking with his prediction.